Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, for the worst 90 minutes in sports podcasting. That's right, it's the Two Guys Soccer Show. I'm Mike, and I'd like to welcome you all to this continued COVID version. Why do I even say you all? There's like a person that listens to this show. So I figured I'd open up the show with a little bit of honesty. And give everybody, the listener, an insight into the planning that goes on for this show. Meaning, there's not much. Normally, we schedule the show on Monday, and on Sunday, we take an opportunity to see what went on that week, take a look around the stores, and then we figure out where we're going to go from there. So there's not normally much of a plan. Shoot, last week, I didn't even know fully who was going to be on the show until I called in and talked to producer Paul, and he said, "Oh, these are the guys that are on." I was like, "Hey, that's a surprise." So, guess a couple of weeks ago, I started looking at the calendar, and I decided, you know what? Paul's been bothering me. He doesn't like it when we have, like, nine guys on the line at the same time. So, but I want to get everybody's thoughts and opinions on the start of the Premier League season. So I figured, you know what? I'll do this. I'll break it up into 2 weeks. Then I can have half the guests on 1 week and then half the guests on the next week. And then even better, what I'll do is I'll get all the Arsenal guys on and then British Will on to do Arsenal and Liverpool after the Charity Shield. And then we can do the other stuff next week. It'll be perfect. Everybody will love it. It'll be great. And then we won't have to worry about talking over each other. Everybody will have time. And then I'll stagger it all out. So I came up with a plan. That was the dumbest thing I've ever done. Because somewhere along the line, I missed that Messi was going to ask for a transfer, and then all the news that's broken over the last couple of days. So I don't want to sound like I have no idea that Messi asked for a transfer, or that Chadwick Boseman died, or that John Thompson died, but I'm also like caught in this situation where I don't know if I can really appreciate and spend all that time talking about that stuff like we normally would do, because I do kind of want to stick the plan. So if we don't, I'm going to balance that out by saying this, you know, I assume that anybody who would listen to this show probably already knows the fact that Messi did not have the common courtesy to decide to send his Burrow fax a day earlier so that I could have talked about that last week. That news had to break, like so many other things do, on Monday. Doggone you, Spanish media! And by the way, if you don't know what a Burrow fax is, it is not a fax simile that was taken to someplace by a donkey. We're not living in an episode of The Office. It's actually a Spanish version of registered mail. So I figure by now everybody knows that. He's on strike. He's not going back. There's a question of a buyout. Can he leave for free? Do they have to pay $700 million? We all know he's going to Man City and they're going to work out a deal because the risk he's not going to sit out a season, and Barcelona can't afford to not get anything for him and let him leave on free. All right, that settles that. I was disheartened this weekend to hear about the passing of Chadwick Boseman at the age of 46. I mean, this dude played T'Challa the Black Panther, Jackie Robinson, James Brown, and Thurgood Marshall. Who's going to play all of our great black characters and figures from history now? But I was really saddened to hear about him, and it was great to see all the tributes from the world of sports, including Lewis Hamilton's Black Panther Wakanda Forever salute after he won the Belgian Grand Prix. And instead, I know this one had to hurt when you woke up this morning and you found out that John Thompson Jr., the coach of Georgetown, passed at the age of 78. Go for it, man.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually did not know until you said something right now. I did not know that he had passed. You know, I knew, though. I mean, of course, I was aware that he had suddenly kind of, like, not been around in media and appearances like that for quite a while, and which is not really – I mean, since John Thompson retired from Georgetown, he has been ever-present on the college basketball and NBA basketball and local Washington, D.C. media, radio, sports circuit. So for him to kind of disappear, I always let you know, okay, is there something going on or not? And the thing about Chadwick Boseman, too, was equally as heartbreaking. But, you know, what's sad, though, is about kind of the state of Hollywood in general is that they tend to do that. They find their one actor, and they make that one actor play everybody. And, you know, we can say what we want about some of the casting that goes on, but Chadwick Boseman looks absolutely nothing like Thurgood Marshall, especially at the age of the person he was when he was playing that role. But no. He played it very well. So, but the positive thing though is that he was one that really could do such a wide variety of roles and made it possible for Hollywood to look away from Denzel Washington, because I think the last time I saw Denzel Washington play someone, that was probably like in their 30s, and Denzel's probably over 60 by now. So hopefully they can then hopefully Hollywood will stop doing that and go, there's lots of actors out there. I think we should probably try and spread our wings a little bit wider. But I know my younger sister was actually friends with him and his wife, so she spoke very positively about the both of them for a very long time. So, and then of course, him being a local Howard University graduate is, makes his passing especially difficult in this area. So yeah, you know, it's like another time where 2020 says, we're going to, you know, kick you in the crotch one more time. It's just one more thing after another. So, you know, the good thing about it almost being September is that we are one less month, we have one less month to deal with this year.
So, we are joined tonight by Stead, Coach G. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. And our voice from the great beyond, our man from across the pond, London, Sean, how goes it, sir?
It goes very well indeed. Very well indeed. And yes, my commiserations as well for Chadwick's passing away.
And he was 43, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, 43. I thought he was 46.
Yeah, 43.
4 years of cancer.
Yeah, which means that he was sick when he was playing Black Panther.
Everybody.
When he was playing everybody. But, yeah, that and then, you know, John Thompson, legendary coach of Georgetown, wearing those Georgetown starter jackets back in the day, that was like a cultural icon. But I think the greatest credit to him will be the fact that in his 20-plus years of coaching, he had a 97% graduation rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's just unheard of. I had the opportunity to meet him in passing once when I went down to talk to JT3 when they went to the Final Four. And John had a big John. And Big John was a very, 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 very. Can I throw one more very
please
in there? Very
yes.
Large. Man, that was a big individual.
Yes,
right?
He's a massive dude.
Even in what in his 60s at that time, he had to be. He was just a big presence, and he wandered into the gym. And the thing is, as big as he is, first you hear him, then you see him.
Mm.
With that loud voice, and he was going to let you know what you thought. He thought there was no way you could ever walk away from a John Thompson conversation and not know exactly what he thought and where he stood. But full credit to him and for being a leader, and to a lot of young people, almost like a surrogate father figure, whether you were a Georgetown fan or not, he was the one person who could actually intimidate you through the TV screen.
But, yep.
6'10". We mourn their passing, and we'll move on, and I'm sure that Messi will come up. Sean, I had this whole entire quip prepared for you before all of this about Carlos Sainz being the one person that might have a worse 2021 than he does of 2020 as he makes that switch to Ferrari.
Yes, they're certainly lagging behind somewhat at the moment, aren't they? So potentially a change of driver might do something, but I think that Merck car is just too good.
So
the combination of having the car and the best driver seems to be ruining the sport of Formula One, which, to be fair, I've never been that enamoured with any way, but it was like it's like the 70s, watching Liverpool win the league every year. It gets very boring.
Yeah. But there was this whole entire matter. There is, I should say, this whole entire matter of football, which is, I believe, why we're all here this evening to talk about. And a new season that started basically what? A little more than a week after the old season ended. And we had our first, if you will, official English game of the 2020-2021 campaign this weekend. And as you can guess by the assembled crowd here, it was Arsenal winning the Charity Shield, the first piece of silverware, over Liverpool. Now, Stead, they tell me this is the first piece of silverware. To me, winning the Charity Shield is kind of like winning an ice cream fork. But you got to celebrate somewhere. Give me your thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I liken the Charity Shield to that that old plate that you put butter on for Thanksgiving that you leave in the back of the fridge for a month and it has breadcrumbs on it, and you usually find it about January 15th or 16th. That's about what the Charity Shield is. But as I say all that and dig on it, it's still fun and enjoyable to see the club you support pick up any trophy for that matter and celebrate. And, you know, while Aubameyang probably has one of the worst smiles I've ever seen, I think with all of his money, and my father's also a dentist, so seeing his teeth can kind of rile me up a little bit. But he's been a fantastic captain for the club. And seeing the side-by-side Photoshopped images that are all over the internet of him and Henri and how similar they've been in their time there, you can't help but smile. And, you know, you're looking at it now and it's saying, you know, Arteta's won a trophy every 21 days or 21 games or something like that. That's all very fun. And while it is a preseason game that you have to do so many things the previous season just to qualify to be able to play in the game, it's still a matchup, and both teams still want to win, and whichever team does win, they seem to celebrate at the end because it's another trophy. So you have to smile at it, and considering that, I don't think we could ever say that for a team to have their worst season in the Premier League, or one of their worst seasons in the Premier League, and their worst season in the last 25 years, to say at the end of that season they win two trophies, it's kind of ironic, you know, because I'm thinking of the 9 years of winning nothing and repeatedly finishing third or fourth, then to finish eighth and win two trophies. It's Arsenal. It's very, very Arsenal. But it's things like that that us who frustrate the recent plight of the team, it keeps us smiling and it keeps us coming back going, you know what, they're going to turn it around. This is the year they're going to win the league. So I didn't watch the game because I couldn't find it, and I was kind of hurting for highlights and stuff online. But I was following along with it on my phone app, and, you know, it appeared that, you know, Arteta's doing something over there. I'm sure we'll talk more about this when we get a bit more into Arsenal's upcoming season. But I can't say that I wasn't happy and I wasn't excited at the end of the game.
So, Jig.
Yeah, you know, it was good to see that we ended and started the season the same way, with, you know, hoisting a trophy above our heads and celebrating and seeing that god-awful smile from Aubameyang. But you're absolutely right that he's got to get some dentist work or something going on there, because it is awful. A couple of good key takeaways from the game. I absolutely love Arsenal's kit. I'm a big fan of the white and burgundy look. I think bring that back as much as possible. At least throw some yellow in there once in a while. But ultimately, it was a preseason, kind of a weird kind of game. You know, the starters aren't playing. The true starters aren't playing. Got some backups. But it's good to see that both teams are so competitive. They're still there. They're, young B squads, I guess you want to say, not their full squad, that they're still competitive and they're still having a chance to fight for hardware. Not every single team, Tottenham, can save for stuff like that, that they're trying to get more trophies for their cases. But ultimately, this is a preseason game, and it's a very small look into what the season might foreshadow. However, we've seen this before where, you know, especially in the NFL, a team might go 4-0 in the preseason, then, you know, go 2-14 in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this is not one of those kind of situations, but Arteta's got something going on right now with the team. Got a bunch of young pups, you know, you got 18, 19, 22-year-old guys who are flying right now, who are believing in his system. So if this is a very small window into this upcoming season, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it much better than last year, and the sky is our limit right now. So, yeah, it's a one small trophy, but let's keep on going. Let's see where this year goes.
And another positive from this game, though, too, was you had, you know, a player who was basically on the selling block with Ainsley, Maitland-Niles, and with his recent showing, he might not be sold. So, you know, I like him, but you know, it's all, you know, that game gave him a chance to get a second look from Arteta, and now Arteta is saying, you know, hold on, I think I have more here than I thought, because he played very well coming down the stretch, and he played very well in cup games for Arsenal. So that's
and plus he's got some age on him. You know, he's got some maturity. He's got some, you know, a little thing that he can add to this team. Where most of the guys, I'm being serious, is like 24 or younger. I think we had the youngest team last year. So with him, I think he's an unsung hero. But yeah, he brings something to the team. I do like him a lot.
So, Sean, at the end of the game, Aubameyang wandered into his locker room. He took off his shorts and his keys, his wallet, and Neco Williams fell out of his pocket. Talk about his goal and what Aubameyang's goal and what you thought of his performance and the overall performance of Arsenal in that game.
I have to say it was very impressive. In fact, the similarity between our performance against Chelsea 3 weeks ago in the FA Cup final and against Liverpool just goes to show that Arteta is putting not only a spine to this team, but they are playing to a formula. So obviously we had a different team out to the one that played in the FA Cup final. Aubameyang's goal was very Thierry Henry-esque, for want of a better word, coming in, starting inside to curl the ball around the keeper with his right foot. Unfortunately, he yet still hasn't signed. I was told 3 weeks ago that this is going to happen, but I think there's been a hold-up with a lot of transfer activity going on at the club. But I think, finally, we should see him sign a contract this week. And by God, you know, if we were to lose him, that would significantly weaken the current Arsenal team. I was very happy that he managed not to drop the trophy this time round, considering he made quite a go of that during the FA Cup final. And I think what was interesting for me is that there were several players on that pitch who may not be with us. Another important thing is to say they were only back 2 days into training. So it was quite impressive that only 48 hours after having returned from holiday that they went out and put what was, you know, a really, really solid performance. We're now only one Community Shield behind you, Mike. So Man U are the current outright holders with 17 outright wins, and that was Arsenal's 16th win in the Community Shield. And let's not forget that it was only even last season when Guardiola was interviewed at one stage and they were sort of 20 points behind Liverpool, and he said, well, we've got two trophies in the bag. And he was mentioning both the Community Shield and the Worthless Cup. So, you know, managers do see this as a way to celebrate. I do think the celebrations were a teeny weeny bit over the top. But going back to the players that might not be with us, I don't think Martinez will be with us when the season starts. Holding is probably on his way to Newcastle on loan, they're talking about. We've mentioned Maitland-Niles already, so... And I don't think that we'll be seeing Elneny starting in central midfield for us when the real starts on the 12th of September. So if you look at that makeshift, he has definitely changed. There's a new belief in the side, basically. frankly, and a confidence that is, you know, carrying this team through. And with that blend and mix of youth and, you know, some experienced players, I think it all goes well. It was certainly a strong Liverpool side. They didn't put out a second team by any stretch of the imagination. So to go toe-to-toe with them was very impressive, although we play them the third game of the actual season. So we'll see how much progress we can make between now and then. All fantastic. And really excited. I'm as excited as a 9-year-old 10 days before Christmas. Waiting to open.
That's a statement. So
yes.
Let's look a little bit forward, gentlemen. This is one of the few times that I will allow this to turn into Arsenal Fan Radio, as we are previewing. We'll start with some Arsenal previews. Going back around the horn. Give me some idea of where you see this season going for Arsenal. What are some key – there was only one real key addition, and that was Willian. But where do you think this season goes after this Charity Shield win?
Well, I really think they solidified the defense. And I hate this. I hope they go the four in the back. But if they go in the four in the back, they got Bellerin and Tierney on the outside with Mari and David Luiz, who are both – Mari and Luiz are over 6 foot two. I'm a big fan of having some strong, tall trees in the center and some fast boys on the outside for offense and defensive purposes. So we kind of have that kind of building right now. You throw Saka in there, some young boys, and just Arteta's magic. Things are might be kind of growing right now in the defense. Kind of start growing a wall, I guess you want to say. Things are looking a little better. They looked really good against Chelsea the other week. So you can see there's elements kind of growing right now. I think with Pepe and Lacazette, I think they're going to be fighting for Aubameyang's attention a little bit. So I think there's going to be a healthy challenge up there in forwards. But all around, even with William and Ceballos, you know, you got the center mids who are going to be working well together. You got a 31-year-old with William. You got a 24-year-old in Ceballos. I think the center, I think everyone right now, I think just have Arteta's hand in all these positions. I think everyone just needs to believe in what he's trying to do. And I think this team really looks a lot better on paper and on in reality than we did even maybe 2 years ago. So I think what he's working right now with some of these young boys, some of these little veterans and stuff like that, he's got something to make it. I can't put my finger on it, but it's looking really good right now.
London, Sean, how do you feel like this team presses on after this?
It's a good question. By the way, there has been fairly significant transfer activity, although some of it happened a little bit during last season, but now we've signed some of the players. So we've brought in Suarez, we've brought in Mari from Flamengo. Obviously, Saliba is now free to play for us, having spent a season stone at Saint-Etienne. Obviously, we've brought in the two Chelsea old boys in David Luiz and Willian. And I don't think the transfer activity will end there. Going out, we sold Mkhitaryan to Roma today. So his 180 grand for the books. Great. No one knows or has seen Ozil for about 3.5 months, so God knows what it is. But I think if you look, it's going to be quite a clear out. So holding Martinez, Socrates, Pereira, Guendouzi, and possibly Lacazette, and possibly Maitland-Niles. So it's a real changing of the guard. But I can see where Arteta's coming from with this, because I think he wants to, A, bring in some of his own personnel, his own players. So if you look at Mari, for example, he had him when he was assistant coach at Manchester City. I think Saliba is going to be a fantastic signing. There's obviously talk this week. Gabriel will be announced as well, coming in from this. So a lot of 2 6-foot-4 central defenders, which Arsenal haven't had since the Bold and Adams days. I would say, Mike, that we seriously can't get any worse. I did that dreaded bit of research knowing that we were going to talk about Arsenal, Liverpool and Chelsea. So if we just look at the points tally, Premier League points tally since the 2016-17 season, which was the season before last that Wenger was in charge. We've only accumulated 264 points in the Premier League, and that's against Liverpool's 347 and Chelsea's 300 during that time. So when you ask the question, what can we see, what is my view of where we're going to end up this year, you sort of got to do that a little bit in comparison to other teams. I cannot see us do anything other than improve from where we were. So we've gone from 75 points in the 16-17 season, and that wasn't good enough to get us fourth place. Liverpool pips us. We got 63 the following season, 70 under Unai Emery. And last season was a disaster. It was our worst season for over 24 years, I think, and we ended up with 56 points. My prediction is that we're going to, I think, head towards the mid-70s. Undoubtedly, what the club want is to get back in the Champions League and get back into those revenue streams again. This will be our fourth season without Champions League football. And we need to get back in as soon as we can. I'm very excited about moving forward in the way that Arteta's getting the team to play. Finally, we're seeing our players run around the pitch, follow instructions, but we've got some real talent in there. And we get to see people like Emil Smith-Rowe come into the team, but he's been brought back where he was on loan last season. So, yeah, everything is looking really good. I have to say just very quickly that I managed to catch the first few episodes of the new Amazon series on Tottenham Hotspur, which is called All or Nothing. And not spoiling the ending for anyone, but they end up with nothing. at least we've got a couple of trophies in the bag, obviously one from last season and one this season. And yeah, I can see us picking up a couple of wins to start our season away to Fulham and at home to West Ham. But then of the next four games, we're away to Liverpool, away to Man City, and away to Manchester United. So that is going to tell us pretty early doors exactly where Arteta has got us. But at the moment, he seems to be doing very well against the big teams. If we can change the results against some of the lower teams, then I would suggest that we can get somewhere over 70 points this season. And of course, it's to be seen whether that's good enough to get us in the top four.
All right, Stead, same question. Where do you see them pressing on from this season?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on a lot of what our colleague across the Atlantic just said. You know, I'm looking at the squad now, and it's pretty bloated. There's a lot of players that expect to play somewhat regularly in the first team and not just be relegated to cup games. So they do have a lot of work left to do. And then, you know, the Gabriel signing appears to be basically going to happen. They're just waiting for him to finish it, but it's quarantine. And while Arsenal has moved, it looks like they're going to move Elneny as well. It also seems like that Ozil's getting some interest from teams in Qatar and in Saudi Arabia, as well as the United States. But, you know, Ozil wants, of course, to get his money. So we'll see what happens there, because as Sean alluded to, we don't really know where he is. I'm sure he's still probably in Turkey. but that being said, it is still, you know, what Arsenal has to do is they have to perform better against the other teams that are in the top six. And that has really been a problem for more years than I think a lot of Arsenal fans would care to admit. It seems as if we're not playing those teams in an FA Cup game, their likelihood they're going to lose is pretty high. So hopefully that can change, because Arteta has, while his personal narrative has been much different against those teams, the team in itself has been struggling in that area. So I'm going to continue to be somewhat negative for now, because of the fact that there still appears to be a lot of uncertainty about what the squad's going to look like. And, you know, you're still hearing rumors about Coutinho possibly coming in, which is shocking. But now I'm going to flip to the positive, the fact that there's still so many rumors. There is some level of truth to all these rumors as far as the interest is concerned. And one thing that we have seen throughout that's been pretty consistent is that there's something special about Mikel Arteta because players seem to want to play for him. And there's interest in a squad that finished in eighth place and is going to be qualifying for the Europa League. There's interest in this squad from players that normally I think would not have shown the same interest had we had the previous coach still aboard. So that's very, very positive. You know, and also I like hearing the fact that no player on this team seems to be 100% safe as far as the ones that have been here for a while. You're hearing rumblings of Hector Bellerin potentially being sold, as well as, you know, they just signed Luis to a deal, but there's interest in him and the Arsenal's listening. So they're not beholden to anyone, and they're only looking to make the squad stronger. I think we could also agree that Arsenal's transfers, they've been overpaying for substandard talent for quite a while. And it wasn't necessarily like the player was brought in and underperformed. There was kind of a shock they were even brought in for the fees that they paid in the first place. And on our little Arsenal chat, we had a little bit of fun talking about past signings. And I still think about Gervinho and Marouane Chamakh, and I giggle to myself every now and then when I think about those two signings. So that
Andre Arshavin?
Yeah, which was the one that made the most sense, and that was probably the one that blew up in the face because he did show flashes of absolute brilliance. He was just extraordinarily inconsistent. So, what I'm saying here is that I'm really putting all of my faith into Arteta to change that particular model that seems to have kept this team perpetually competing for the final spot in Champions League, and that's about it. And the only time they've done better, there's been a huge gap between their third place finish and the teams that are competing for the Premier League title, or it's a fluke season where Leicester wins the championship. Wins the Premier League. So I expect Arsenal to finish better than Wolves and Spurs this year. I expect that to occur. The team has too much talent, and I think the team has more talent now than they've had in quite a long time. So I expect them to finish above those teams, but because the top of the table is very heavy, I can't say with extreme right now they are going to qualify for Champions League, though they need to. They really, really need to. So we'll see what happens, and I think I'd like to play our season prediction games again after the transfer season is over, and we've had a couple of games that have occurred in the season, so we can cheat a little bit.
Yeah, not going to happen. fast forward to June. Tell me where you see Arsenal season ending up.
Man, so it was a coin flip between the fifth and sixth, and Leicester City won. So I have Arsenal ended up in sixth place with Leicester in fifth and Tottenham in seventh.
All right, and where do you see them? How do you see them finishing in the Europa League this year?
I see Arsenal at least getting to the semifinals. I think as the season goes on, I think the more of the Arteta feel and the players kind of bind into the system will actually get them very, very deep into that, almost to the fourth round in the PKs, and they'll eventually lose it in there. But I think they're going to have really high hopes going into Europa this year.
All right, so you gave me Arsenal in fifth, Leicester in sixth, and Tottenham in seventh. So that means that we've got Arsenal in the Europa League spot. And depending on cup finals, Leicester and Tottenham rounding them out, what do you see as your top four?
All right, now let me ask you this. Does Man City have Messi or no?
I will give you an asterisk for Man City and allow you to say that you Man City with and with your top four with and without Man City having Messi.
As of right now, without Messi, I got Liverpool 1, Man United 2, Chelsea 3, Man City without Messi number 4. Then we'll go Leicester, Arsenal, Tottenham. Now, if you throw Messi in there, things completely change. We throw Man City on number 1, then we move everyone down, Liverpool, Man U, Chelsea at number 4. But I believe this year the top four are just going to beat the crap out of each other, and I believe they're going to be more tied games. So I think it might be more of a log jam, which was going to allow maybe Arsenal or even Leicester kind of maybe pop up there, maybe steal a fourth spot. So we'll see. But definitely Liverpool, Man U, Chelsea, Man City, top four. Then from there, let's go Leicester, Arsenal, and Tottenham.
And then at the bottom of the table, tell me who you see getting booted.
All right, so Austin Villa, see you later, bye-bye. Fulham, hey, it was nice while you're up here for 1 year, you're back down. Now, West Ham, for the longest time, has been teetering on relegation. So I finally figure that it's going to be their years this year. So Austin Villa, West Ham, and Fulham.
All right, and then my favorite prediction of all time. Give me a prediction or two that you know is sure to go wrong.
All right. Well, it's final game of the year. Arsenal's in second, in first place. Chelsea's in second place. We're down. They're down by 2 points. And here it is. Mohamed Anani, he's about to score his 33rd goal to win the golden boot for Arsenal. And all you guys are saying that he's about to get rid of him. Like, my prediction is all crap now. So awesome. Thanks, guys. So he's going to win the golden boot with 33 goals. And Arsenal will finish in second, because David Luiz will accidentally miss the ball, which would lead to Chelsea scoring a 1-0 game, because David Luiz is still on the books for Chelsea. So at the end of the season, Chelsea will win first place by 1 point over Arsenal, thanks to David Luiz.
All right. G, we'll get you back later on in the season to see how that goes and how those things go for you. But I absolutely love it. There were so many things in that prediction sure to go wrong that I don't even know how to quite unpack it. But thanks for joining us today, buddy. And we will see you coming up. All right.
Yes, sir. Thanks, guys, for having me. Have fun, guys. Take care.
All right.
See you,
G. We're going to swap out G for the opposite side of the Charity Shield and bring on British Will. Will, how you doing this evening?
Oh, you know, I'm doing the best I can, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, the Arsenal fans were saying, oh, it's preseason, but they're happy to have won. Correct me when I'm wrong, and then you can give me your take. It's the preseason. We didn't have our strongest team. They are only just back into training. Trent Alexander wasn't playing. And we all know Jurgen Klopp's reputation in games that he doesn't really care about. So we shouldn't really, really take anything away from the fact that Arsenal beat Liverpool in the Charity Shield.
I mean, I want to agree with you, but I have to disagree with you. And that's just purely based on the team that Klopp sent out. Like, if he didn't care about this game at all, he wouldn't have sent out the starting 11 minus Trent, because Trent is injured. So, you know, James Milner and Nico Williams wouldn't have been in that starting 11 if it was just full strength starting 11. Jordan Henderson and Alexander-Arnold would have been in there. But that being said, they played awfully. It was one of the – they played, like it was a preseason friendly where they hadn't played for 2 weeks, let alone the fact that Arsenal had only had 3 days in training. It looked as though they were completely slow, off the pace. They didn't really look as they were trying. I'm so glad that Roberto Firmino got taken off for Takumi Minamino or whomever he was taken off for, because, you know – I didn't hear his name once mentioned in the commentary. I didn't see him do a real single thing that was interesting or innovative. It just sort of looked like a Liverpool team that couldn't be bothered to run, and a Liverpool team that can't be bothered to run and work hard is a Liverpool team that loses or draws a game. I think that Arsenal played the game exactly correctly for the way they'd been set up, and I think I have to applaud Arteta for that. And yes, I can say that the goal was entirely Nico Williams' fault for being on the left-hand side of defence when he was playing as right-back. But, you know, Liverpool just showed no desire to win that game. The only people that really showed any desire were the people who came off the bench, and that was Takumi Minamino and Naby Keita. And there's a reason that we scored a goal in the second half, and that was those two, their invention and their drive. To try and play and win a spot in this team, which at this point, if they continue to play like that into the start of the season, I can easily see them winning a spot in this team. So that's my rant about Liverpool's performance in the Community Shield. I know that it's a completely unimportant game, but it just looked as though they couldn't be asked to show up.
Well, I've got you for the first time that I can recall actually ranting negatively about Liverpool. The stretch since they have won the Premier League title, we've seen them lack the desire. Now, at the end of last season, it was job done. You've won the Premier League. There's nothing left to play for. You're out of all the cups. They did their job. They got their first Premier League in 20 years, or more than 20 years, 30 years. And they took their foot off the gas, and it was understandable given how the layoff and all that sort of stuff. Do you have any trepidation going into this season off the back of the performance that you just saw?
No. That my rant notwithstanding, I don't really have too many trepidations, just purely based on the fact, I mean, I could be wrong here. You know, Jurgen Klopp did have a season that imploded on him at Borussia Dortmund. But just purely based on the fact of Jurgen Klopp and the desire and the ability that is in the depth of Liverpool, I know we don't like to talk about the depth of Liverpool because it's not as, you know, stats and mind-bogglingly impressive as Manchester City. But Liverpool does have some pretty solid depth. They have starting players in Marco Grujic, who's out on loan in Germany. They have young players like Curtis Jones, who's trying to break into the first team. They have players like Rian Brewster, who I know he came on and missed a and that's literally his only kick of the game. But, you know, he was a quality player at a team like Swansea, which was fighting for promotion. So if he went off to a lower tier Premier League team, he would obviously be a starter. So I think that there is enough push and drive from the Liverpool bench to give Klopp the ammunition that he needs to say, look, guys, if you're not going to run, then I'm going to put someone else out there. And I think that we saw that towards the end of the second half when Keita and Minamino came onto the pitch because they really did turn that game around for a few minutes there.
So I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath. Sean, where do you see Liverpool's season going this season?
I find it quite interesting. I didn't really know much about the owners of Liverpool, but they don't really have a history in the States, I believe. It's a baseball franchise, and I'm just trying to think, do they own an American football team as well? But anyway,
own the Red Sox. And LeBron James is a minority owner.
Okay. But certainly from what I've read, there's not much of a history of necessarily over-investing in their teams, unlike Mr. Abramovich, and I'm sure we'll talk about Chelsea a bit later on. So I think there's a danger at the moment, and I don't quite get it. I know that the transfer window doesn't close until the 6th of October, but there's been very little activity as far as we're concerned. I think the only player I can see they've signed is Seth van der Berg from PEC Zwolle, which, you know, obviously didn't manage to make the headlines in any newspapers over here. So history will tell us that, you know, teams need to reinvest. So anyway, the window doesn't close to the 6th of October. We shall see. But as we talk today, I think Liverpool are going to find it possibly tougher than they imagined. So the bookies over here have Liverpool as second favourites for the season coming up. I would agree with what Will said. Their performance was a bit lacklustre against us. I also saw their game against Red Bull. They played a friendly a couple of days earlier and had gone 2-0 down. And I think Brewster came on to sort of rescue them to a 2-all draw. They looked fairly lacklustre that day as well. So I'm going to forecast that they may have a tougher season than people may hope. The other thing that's against them from a historical perspective is that it's very difficult to retain the Premier League. We've seen that. The only person who mastered that particular was Sir Alex Ferguson, who I think won the league 3 times in a row twice.
Yes, he did.
But very few other teams have retained their title. So I think Klopp is... So if I look at their points, for example, it was interesting that I mentioned Arsenal's points. 16-17, Liverpool got 76 points. The following season, they got 75. That was the season when Man City got 100. And then they've been neck and neck in the 18-19 when Liverpool obviously lost the title by only 1 point, but they accumulated 97 points. And then this year, of course, they got 99, and City have somewhat dropped away. I can see a huge swing. Obviously, Dee had mentioned the metal factor, but I can see Man City actually going back and challenging much more for the title this year. And I just can't see Liverpool at the moment, subject to any further transfer activity, getting over 90 points. So I think they're absolutely nailed on the top four. But I see Liverpool finishing maybe third or fourth. Yeah.
So, Will, fast forward to June. How does this season end for Liverpool?
I mean, I'm going to say that we win the league again, because just simply because I have to continue my streak of saying this year's our year. At the beginning of the season, I do agree that it will be a tough title to retain. I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying that. And, you know, on the financial point of view, the Ferguson Sports Group, which is the majority owner of Liverpool, has made it entirely clear any profits that the team make are reinvested in the team. And Liverpool has invested in a £50 million new training centre and, you know, youth development centre. So that's a £50 million player down that Liverpool will not be able to bring in. So, yes, Liverpool was one of the few teams in the English league system that was profitable for the last few years. But, you know, they're one of the teams that their money is their money, basically. So there's not going to be any nice, you know, Mr. Abramovich has come in with £300 million to buy you an entirely new starting lineup, Mr. Klopp. It's going to be, Mr. Klopp, you have a starting lineup. What can you do with it? And I think that's sort of where Klopp will thrive. I don't really see a shortfall in the number of points that Liverpool accumulate. I think that there might be a change in the areas of the season that they accumulate points. There might be a little bit of a spell at the start of the season, possibly, that they don't accumulate as many points as they did for the last two seasons on the trot. But, you know, in the 2018-2019 season, there was an almost certainty that Liverpool was going to win the league, and they got pipped at the post because they had a very weak January and February. And this season, they had a very weak after they won the title, which was why they didn't win 112 points. So I don't think that Liverpool are going to be losing. Don't going to accumulate less than 95 points. I think that that's probably about the threshold. 95 plus is the threshold this team can win, and 95 plus is the number of points this team can win. And I think that will be enough to win the title. I personally think their biggest challenger, despite the fact that I don't think that, and I think that Chelsea Mike will have something to say about this, I don't think that Frank Lampard is a great manager, but I think that Chelsea will be the number one challengers to Liverpool, just purely based off star factor and that winning games and bringing in so many new players, signing basically an entirely new team. I think that Manchester City will come in third, and I don't think that Guardiola will renew his contract. And any talk of Messi coming to the Premier League is really fantasy talk. Because, you know, June 1st is June 1st in a contract, and Manchester City can try and sign him and fight it out in the courts, but I just don't think that will happen.
So, as far as silverware, what do you see besides the Premier League title Liverpool accumulating this year?
I could see a nice Champions League joining the Premier League trophy. But I could also not see that happening. I don't think that Klopp will compete for the domestic cups because, frankly, they're unimportant and they hold no place in his mind as a worthwhile trophy to win, because the FA Cup essentially is secured by coming within the top four, and what's the point in playing anyone apart from youth there? And I think that the Champions League, as we saw this year, is very difficult to win. I think that Liverpool will win it, but you know, that's my optimistic Liverpool perspective.
So,
Stead, I'll pose you the same question. Fast forward to June, where do you see Liverpool ending up this season?
I see Liverpool actually probably winning the Man City Cup, and that could be. It could be where they end. A lot of those questions are going to be answered over the next 2 weeks. But Liverpool, you know, they sold Dejan Lovren, but they brought in, you know, the Greek guy to kind of like a like-for-like trade almost. So, but it's I still see this as a two-team race between Man City and Liverpool this year. And I think it's a coin flip, honestly, between Liverpool and Manchester City. I think a lot of it will depend on Pep's mood and if he is feeling pretty upset and frisky, or if he's going to be one of the more calm figures on the sideline. So, but you know, I think it's very naive to think that the top of the table is going to look much different as far as who those specific teams are. But I mean, I see Liverpool winning again. Overall, though, I do see them winning again with probably winning by 5 to 6 points over Manchester City.
All right. So, Will, you kind of hinted at it, but give us your top four and the teams that you think are going to end up in the Europa League places.
I think the top four will be Liverpool in number one. Then it's Chelsea. I think Chelsea will give quite a bit of a tighter chase than people give them credit for. But, you know, I could be wrong about that one. That's my prediction that might blow up in my face. In third place, I see Manchester City. In fourth place, I see Manchester United. In fifth place, I'm going to say Leicester. In sixth place, I'm going to say Wolves. And in seventh place, I'm going to say Arsenal. I don't think they improved too much, but I think they do have a better season than they did this year.
All right, and then who do you see going out the back door of the Premier League?
I'm going to agree with G here and say that West Ham has had its day in the Premier League. They just don't seem to be able to keep themselves as a Premier League team. They might be able to pull off another disappearing act from the bottom three, but I doubt it. I have absolutely always hated West Brom, so I'm going to say they're going down, just based on personal bias against them. And then I think that Aston Villa just will hopefully go down, because they should be down this year.
And you said Chelsea was one of your predictions. Chelsea giving a chase might be a prediction to blow up in your face, but give me a prediction that you know it's sure to go wrong.
My prediction that's sure to go wrong. My prediction that's sure to go wrong is almost certainly going to be that Virgil van Dijk gets injured in the second game of the season, and the youngster who was on the bench for Liverpool in the Community Shield, Billy Kumetio, will come in and do an absolutely bang-up job in covering for him, so much so that Virgil van Dijk is going to have to fight to get his spot back in April. That will be my definitely going wrong prediction, or at least I hope it is. And then another one that I think will be a prediction that goes wrong is Bernd Leno will get his spot back in the Arsenal team, but after 10 games where he only keeps two clean sheets, Martinez will come back in and keep clean sheets for just about every other game for the rest of the Premier League season.
All right, that's deep, and you are on the record. My man, it was good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us tonight, and we'll catch up with you as this season goes on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and now we turn to, I definitely heard some shots fired at our next guest. Chelsea Mike,
well,
you there?
Yes, I am. Good to be here.
All right.
What were you going to say instead?
I was just going to say, for him to say that Arsenal hasn't improved, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But I'll leave that for another time.
Okay, look, we have never acted like that. We are not biased. And everybody is entitled to their opinion. Whether or not you feel that seventh place in adding William is enough of an improvement.
I didn't say they wouldn't finish seventh place. I'm just saying to say that they haven't improved.
I think
he was
saying
that they would improve,
though.
But
they have improved. They haven't improved that much. But Mike, you guys have had one of the busier transfer windows of any team, and thanks for joining us.
Right,
what
no
do
problem.
You make of
say,
Abramovich's moves thus far?
I mean, a couple of things. I think they're addressing exactly what needs to be addressed. They've improved it at forward. We talked about that. And the last time I was on, we talked about that. But I said they had to get better at the back. And I think they did that with Thiago Silva. And I like that they went not only short-term with signing defenders, but they went long-term. I think Chilwell is a long-term investment. And I like that even younger with Malang Sarr. I think they recognized they had a problem in the back, in the middle. I think they've moved to address that. The firepower they have up front. I mean, yeah, it's young in many ways. I don't think they're going to overtake Liverpool this year. But I agree with the last guest. I think a second place finish, you know, not only because that's where I think they'll finish on the table, but I think that also because if that's not where they are, I think Frank might be fired. You know, you can't go. And I mean, if they get Havertz, you know, you're looking at $300 million in the transfer market. I think they're going to expect some results. I think that puts a lot of pressure on Frank Lampard. I think Abramovich has said, you've got the pieces now. I hope second place is good enough. Last time they did this, 2004, they went out and won the title. So you got to wonder what the expectations are. For me, it's second place, but.
So, Sean, what do you make of Chelsea's offseason thus far?
Well, their transfer activity is hugely impressive. They've definitely strengthened the team. It does make me laugh a little bit that Chelsea fans were taking the mickey out of us last year when we signed David Luiz, and now they've signed someone who's always an old extension and is going to get a free fucking bus pass in London. I think. Now, I've no idea how old Thiago Silva is, but he's got to be in his early 40s. But apart from
he's
that...
He's 35, yeah.
He'll get his bus pass. I also believe that Chelsea could finish second this season. What I said earlier, I disagree. I think City will win. I don't understand why. Sorry, I know we're talking about Chelsea, but why people are putting Leicester in fifth place? I've got no idea. I've got to start.
Either.
I'm not with that. But I have consciously.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, because will both have Leicester fifth. I mean, that's crazy stuff. So, what the hell do you
mean? It's where they finished last year. It's unoriginal.
But, okay. Yeah. Stead and Sean, I have consciously saved you guys asking those questions to you guys because I have you for another week, and at which point I can get a week. I can give you the hand. I can give you the advantage of another week's worth of knowledge, so you don't have to feel bad. But that, yes, and I haven't said a doggone thing. When you lose players like Ben Chilwell, you don't get better. I don't think that Leicester comes in fifth. They would be one of the ones that I would have dropping down. But that's just me.
They're not even going to finish top 10. But it's another discussion for another day. Let's have a look at Chelsea. Chelsea won the league in 16-17 with 93 points. Subsequently, in 17-18, they got 70. 18-19, they got 72, and last season was their poorest for some time, was 65. So Mr. Abramovich has gone out to try and address this and rectify this. I can see Chelsea easily gaining another 15 points from their total last season to sort of put them in the 80s. I don't think we'll ever see a season again like the one two seasons ago where Liverpool and City both got in the high 90s. I think those days are gone. The teams are a lot, lot closer. We'll find out very, very soon in the season where Chelsea are at, because I think they're at home to Liverpool on the second game of the season. So that will start telling us exactly where they are in comparison to the champions. So on the whole, yeah, got to take my hat off. I have to say that I was very sad in 04 when Mr. Abramovich went out and did all that buying, because Arsenal were top of the tree, just having finished our invincible season, and he came in and absolutely smashed it. But Chelsea have got quite a kind start to the season. They're away to Brighton, home to Liverpool, away to West Brom, who I also hate, by the way, Will. at home to Palace, at home to Southampton, away to Man U, and away to Burnley. So those first sort of six or seven games, I think, will hopefully help Frank build some confidence in the team. I can see them putting points on the board. It's whether they can then, sustain that, I suppose, through the rest of the season. But my prediction would firmly be to see Chelsea finish. I think they can finish second, if not at worst, third.
All right. So, Mike.
Yep.
I want you to do me a favor and hop in your fast-forward machine. We're going to June. How does this season look for Chelsea? Where do they finish in the league? Are they picking up silverware? What's going good? What's going wrong for Chelsea?
Yeah. When I'm looking forward, what I see is, yes, one piece of silverware. I'm gonna go bold and say FA Cup. They were right there last year.
I think he's saying that it's worth. I'm going to defend the kid, but he has a very, 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 very dim view of domestic cups. And we can talk about them when the League Cup starts. I do think for teams like Liverpool, where you're competing for the Champions League, it becomes a distraction. But for teams like Chelsea or Man United, Arsenal sometimes, where you're just trying to get a trophy, there's a certain value to winning it. I don't think that we're that far off, but you're going to go bold, Mike, and say Chelsea pick up the FA Cup?
Yeah, that I am. And I think part of that's going to be because I think that, they could be disappointing in Europe still, which, I'm going to say quarterfinals. But when you spend the kind of money that Chelsea did this year, I don't know. Quarterfinals to me is par, and I don't think they're going to break par. Second place in the league, my future machine, and this is going to be my bold prediction. My prediction that's sure to go wrong. Kepa settles in. I think really, no matter what, they're going to stabilize the goaltender situation. I think with the firepower they've added, if they stay healthy, Christian Pulisic seemed nagging injuries, and he's a major piece. Thiago Silva, as we mentioned, is 35. And with him being the anchor of the defense, there's some potential in there. If that goes wrong, then, you're looking at other teams. I think that the top of the Premier League has gotten so tight, with so much talent, that if you slip up a little bit, you have some bad luck, you're going to drop a place or two. If I'm Man U, which I think Man U is going to come in fourth. If they have some bad luck, they're now you're looking at a Europa League place. But anyway, Chelsea, FA Cup, bring it home this year. Not stellar in Europe, quarterfinals, second in the league. you know, I think that Frank Lampard is a kind of guy who seems to – there doesn't seem to be a lot of dissent. Doesn't seem to be a lot of turmoil, except with Capa. So if that gets under wraps, he brings a younger team closer to the mountaintop that they want to be at.
So, Sted, we have seen before that teams that make the number of additions and the number of places that Chelsea have can often struggle initially where people are learning how to play with each other. And this could especially be exacerbated by the fact that we don't have an extended preseason. We don't have a chance for them to go on tour, a chance where they're traveling together, they're spending a lot of time together. You know, we're in the COVID situation, practices are limited. Do you think that I think that it's a risky move to make all the number of additions. Now, they are good additions, but could you see this number of additions backfiring on Chelsea? Sean spoke of the relatively doable start to the season. Could you see them struggling a little bit out of the gate, Chelsea?
I think the surprise of what they're going to be putting on the field is actually going to serve them well initially. What I predict to happen with Chelsea is that they will have kind of like a Mourinho-esque type of run. Well, they'll play really well. They might win a cup or two this season and compete for the Premier League, but part relatively quickly down the road where the big money splashes that they made this year will, you know, really not return on the investments that they've made. And but for Chelsea fans, the luckily thing is Roman Abramovich has no problem opening up the checkbook when he feels like it's time to restart. So as long as this doesn't turn into a place where they have a lot of players, a lot of money on the books that, and then they have to move players that they're unable to move because of the fees that they're paying them, then you know, this could be something relatively positive for Chelsea. These are young players, and they look like they could turn into quite a force again. It's funny, Chelsea's kind of became that forgotten team last season, where I know we talked a lot on this podcast about the teams that were directly above them and the teams that were directly below them, but we didn't really spend too much time discussing their success and their finishing in the top four and qualifying for Champions League. So there's still like this kind of like, oh yeah, I forgot about them. Yeah, they do have quite a bit of history. Yeah, they do. They do actually. They are actually one of the teams that are going to be competing for basically every competition that they're in this year. So a lot of it does remain to be seen. But I just when you have a splash like this where you look like you're spending £200-300 million in one season, just, and that's just on transfer fees, that is pretty striking. And to hope that particular elixir does come together and work initially, it could be short-sighted, but it could also be something that where they're able to catch lightning in a bottle for a little while, but then the bottle ends up exploding.
So, Mike, you've kind of hinted at this, but if I can read the tea leaves that you gave me, your top four, you had Liverpool 1, Chelsea 2, City 3, and United 4. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. Then you have Chelsea winning the FA Cup. So that means sixth place comes into play. Who ends up finishing in the Europa League places for you?
I'm going to give Tottenham a spot. I'll put them fifth. I'll do Arsenal sixth.
Ooh, you did not make any friends on this podcast with that one.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
But at least he's making sense not putting Leicester Tottenham at fifth, though.
And I'll let Wolverhampton be the Warriors of seventh place again, as they have been for the last 2 years.
And then who do you have going out the back door?
Okay, I've got Brighton going down.
Good.
I just
can't stand them.
I mean, I know. They were right around. They kind of had a little blip at the end post COVID. And went up and escaped the zone, but they were not good. I'll put West Ham down.
West Ham, that's three for three on West Ham tonight.
Yeah.
I'll have a wager with all of you that West Ham stay in the Premier League. Happy to take you four.
Okay.
West Ham,
the stakes have been laid. The challenges have been laid. So, Mike, you said Brighton, you said West Ham, and who else?
West Brom.
And Brighton, West Brom, and West Ham. So West Ham gets 3 votes tonight. West Brom gets 2 votes tonight. You know, surprisingly, no one has said Fulham yet.
G said Fulham.
Okay,
yeah, he said Fulham.
So Fulham only got 1. Villa got only 1.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm just saying.
I think Fulham's making improvements. They were top of the championship last year. I see them as staying. Are they going to have a run where they're in the top half, like Sheffield last year? I don't know about that, but yeah, I think Fulham are good enough to stay. Which I hate that, you know, West London.
I'm not. I have not gone on record as making anything. I'm just pointing out what y'all are saying. And you hinted at. So you said your bold prediction, sure to go wrong, is that Kepa beds in. I know that they've wanted to get rid of Kepa, but I think this might be the reality of the COVID transfer window for Chelsea. I don't think that. A, they can get anybody in that's better than him, or B, they can get rid of him. Does that seem to be like what you feel?
Well, yeah. I think they're both the factors are just there for him to stay. They're never going to move him on that deal for him getting what he thinks he's worth after what they paid to get him. They'd have to take a pretty big loss there, and I don't know if Kepa would take the cut in salary or not improvement in salary. He thinks that he should probably be at this point in his career, and who can blame him for that? But also, yeah, who's better? I don't know. Oblak?
Oblak might be better. I think that Donnarumma might be better. I just don't think that you get them this year. I think that with the outlay for Werner and Havertz and Chilwell and them, even though we know financial fair play is a joke, you know, you would be paying easily another 80, 90 million for somebody like Gigi Donnarumma right now.
Oh yeah. No. And yeah. And is that worth it? I mean, Kepa's issues to me always seem to be confidence. I know last year we did on this podcast a comparison about De Gea and Kepa, the Spanish goalkeeper struggling. And De Gea, even when he was making bad mistakes, he still looked like he knew what he was doing. Whereas Kepa, there's sometimes corners and stuff, he just got lost. So that's the question, is Kepa's confidence. Can he get that back? And I mean, who's going to pay for a guy who's got the yips out there? Nobody's going to pay anywhere near the value. And again, you're right. They don't have $75 million to spend when they already have the world's most expensive keeper.
So give me one, before we let you go for the evening, give me another prediction or two that you know is sure to go wrong for you.
Messi to Paris. we're just gonna go wrong there, and I'm gonna go. Timo Werner leads the league in goals.
All right, you definitely putting our marker out there. All right, Mike, I want to thank
you
for joining us, and we will have you back on later in the season as we go forward.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, gentlemen, some very, very interesting statements from our various guests tonight. And look, for all intents and purposes at this point, Sean, your family, it's Two Guys Soccer Show. Maybe we should just call it the Two and a Half Guys or the Two Guys and an Englishman Show.
Yeah. I like Two Guys and an Englishman.
guys in England.
Yeah, but like you're becoming part of the fabric. The three of us, seem to be more down on Leicester, and since we don't actually have anybody who covers Leicester, I figure we'll hash this out amongst the three of us. I don't see them being as successful simply because I haven't seen them bring anybody in to replace
mm-hmm.
what's going out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as strongly when you lose a player like Ben Chilwell, you don't get better. The defense was proven to be a little bit thin at the end of the year. And although Jamie Vardy is still capable of coming up with goals and going on those streaks that only he can, they were mm-hmm. found a little bit wanting at the back end of the season. When he's not knocking them in, they're just not as potent as mm-hmm. you would like them to be. And it's not a particularly deep squad. And again, one that's going to be competing in Europe and with not a lot of reinforcements. I personally think that the teams around them have improved where Leicester has not. And while I think they're going to be a tough, I think you have the continuity of a team like Wolves and the improvement of, you know, of Arsenal. And I know it's going to, you guys are going to hate me for saying this. And well, Los is going to love me for saying this, but I think that Tottenham improves with another season of Jose Mourinho. I just think that, you know, the fifth place finish for Leicester is going to be a bit of a stretch. And to say that they're going to improve, I personally don't see that happening. I think that they're fighting with Wolves for 7th, 8th at best. What do you think, Stead?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you pointed out the issue that Leicester has, and the problem is that when Jamie Vardy goes cold, which every striker is bound to do every now and then, they don't have anybody that's going to be consistent. They don't have that Son Heung-min kind of player who can move into the middle and put goals in. I mean, you're looking at their other players like Ayoze Perez, and Kelechi Iheanacho, they've got, like, you know, 2 goals, 5 goals, 4 goals in the Premier League. So they're not able to pick up that slack. And to rely on Jamie Vardy, who's, I believe, 34 now, and while he has just signed an extension, well, okay, he's 33, he has signed an extension he's going to slow down. He's going to slow down. And it's been no secret that I am a Vardy fan. I think he has really done a lot with what his skill set is, and I still think his pace is one that could put lots of pressure on the defense. But to rely on that solely as your means of offense is going to exacerbate any problem you have if you are trying to if you are looking a little light in the back. I mean, they were playing Wes Morgan until, like, really, really recently, and he couldn't run very well when they won the championship. So it's difficult to. It's difficult for me to say that they're going to have another season. And I think that we have to look at where they finished last year in fifth as that is deceptive. They didn't finish as a fifth place squad. They came out the gates very, very strongly and were playing well, but they were also playing well in a season where the teams that were surrounding them were playing really, really poorly. So it wasn't as necessary that they were head and shoulders above. They were just luckily to have a run when all the other teams they were competing with just weren't seemed to be playing well. So to expect Leicester to finish in a Europe spot this year on a thin team that they brought in no one and they lost Ben Chilwell, I think that's really short sighted. So unless they expect them to do something before transfer window closes, I don't see them finishing higher than 8th place. I could see Everton finish higher than Leicester. So, I could. They have a new coach. They're bringing in James Rodriguez. They're bringing in players. You know, you could see it. I'm just saying, you could easily see it happening. So, I'm not sold on Leicester at all. The way they tanked after the year, that, like, seasons carry into next season. It's not like you get a hard stop and all of a sudden everything clicks all over again and you're back to where you were before. I don't think anybody should be too confident in Leicester finishing in a Europe spot next year.
One team, Sean, that we haven't heard possibly finishing it in a Europe spot, although G might have said it, because I can't see him saying Tottenham would finish from a Europa League spot. And they're kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about. They haven't really brought in anybody, but you feel like consistency is going to benefit them, and that could be Wolves. What do you think of their prospects for this season?
Again, it's as you just said there, I don't think they, to my knowledge, have they bought anyone yet?
They bought Luke Matheson from Rochdale for £1 million. That's it.
Yeah, oh, they were never going to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, but they were able to make they sold $30 million so far. So you know they got a little bit of money.
They got a bit of money, but the one thing that they did do is to this point. They've hung on to Raul Jimenez. They've hung on to, it's surprising to me, but they've still managed to hang on to Adama Traore, Neto. A lot of their key cogs
are still there.
And
yeah, I think going forward, they'll certainly miss Matt Doherty, who obviously has just signed for Spurs this week, hasn't he? He provided a lot of crosses, a lot of assists. So I don't know. I think I mentioned this earlier with Liverpool. I think it's all the danger if you don't add to your squad that you can't always take for granted that you know you're going to perform exactly the same way you did the season before. Having said that, I like Nuno a lot, and he was one of the managers that we were looking at, I think, before we signed our test. I think he's an excellent manager. They're tied in with his agent, aren't they, as well? It seems as though all the players are with one agent, a little bit like with us, with Jorgensen. So in answer to your question, I see them finishing about 8th or 9th this year. I actually think that Leeds finish above them.
You think that Leeds is going to finish above them? Now, we haven't really...
Hey, Sean, stop stealing my thunder, man.
Well, all right, boys.
Chelsea is to take the Premier League by storm.
I'm buying a jersey, man.
I'm not going to lie, and they are rivals of Man United and Liverpool. So, I am... not going to be as high on Leeds as y'all might be, but you know, talk about the Premier newcomers. What should we be looking for from Bielsa and Leeds as they come up?
Well, I've seen Leeds quite a lot, not live, obviously, on television. So I watched them both, not last season, but the season before as well. And what was incredible was that he actually inherited exactly the same team that was left for him. And he just needs to transform those players. It was unbelievable. They gave us a big run for our money in the FA Cup this season when we played them in January in the first round proper. And they probably should have won the game, the Emirates, but we squeezed through. So I just have a sneaky feeling that but the one thing that I don't understand, however, with Bielsa is that he's relying on this Bamford for this centre forward because he's absolutely rubbish. He's about as good as Tony Cascarino was at Chelsea in the mid-70s. So I think if he can find a striker, someone that can put in sort of 15, 20 goals, I think, well, because they're quite a young team as well, these. So, I can see them... Yeah, finishing mid-table and being comfortable. I think there'll be a few shocks. And I didn't want to say this to Will, but I'm really looking forward to that first game of the season, the Liverpool-Leeds game, I think. And I think Liverpool could be in for a... I can't see Leeds winning, but I think they might be in for a shock.
What do you think about Leeds, Ted?
Yeah, I have to agree. I have to admit, I do have a soft spot for Leeds. I remember a long, long time ago, the very first Premier League game I was able to watch on television was a replay at about 3 a.m. in Derby County, and the game ended 1-1. And I'm pretty sure it ended 1-1. But so, you know, I don't know why. And I used to work with a guy from Leeds, and he had a jersey, and I thought it was cool looking. So, you know, the way they won the championship, as dominant as they were, and that is a team. I mean, it's one of those teams where the Premier League is better if Leeds is in the Premier League. It's just better. They should be there. And they have a great stadium. You know, they have a very, very strong fan base. They're kind of like a Newcastle-esque team as far as the way their fans follow them. And but you know, they spent some money. You know, I believe they brought in Rodrigo from Valencia. So
yeah,
young forward. So he can play winger, he can play striker. So you know they're not trying to come up and just try to see if they can sneak around and try to finish 17th. They're trying to actually play a little bit and make some noise. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that first game against Liverpool. You could see Liverpool getting off to a slow start. You could see Leeds getting an early goal and putting some pressure on them and making all of a sudden everything seem kind of interesting. So I don't know, you know, and they also purchased, I think they bought Costa from Wolves as well. So, you know, they're coming up, and I feel like they're doing things the right way. They're keeping their core intact, but they're going to go out and they're going to try, and I'm sure they're going to try to probably bring in a few more players on loan who can provide them with some depth, because it's it's a long season. So I have to agree with Sean. I see them finishing mid-table, having a Sheffield type season. I could see that happening.
I was waiting for somebody to bring up the Sheffield United reference, but we'll talk about them next week. So next week, tune in for part two of the Premier League previews when we talk about I gave Arsenal Fan Radio their time today. I'm taking mine next week.
Yeah. We got Coach Matt coming on next week.
We got Coach Matt coming on, and we've got Carlos coming on next week, and I'm trying to dig up my answer. So Sean was a Christmas present, early birthday present, anniversary present to you. I'm bringing on my version. I'm trying to get my version of Sean. I need to get a salty old Mancunian to come on and talk Manchester United, and I think I finally found him.
You found him. I'm sorry.
We'll get a little Manchester United chat. We'll catch up with Carlos and talk about and then the three of us need to go on record with our actual predictions. Now, gentlemen, I was nice to you because I like you and you're doing this show two weeks in a row. Well, instead, you're contractually obligated to do it. But so I'll give you the extra week before I put you on record. And who knows? This week could bring a lot of stuff.
That's true.
We could finally have an end to the Messi saga. But yeah, as we go out, real quick, before we do, I want to give a big shout out to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and entertainment. Thanks for keeping us on. And a big shout out to producer Paul for juggling all of the guests that we had on. As we hit the bricks with the last 2 minutes, 90 seconds that we have, give us your parting shots as we leave. Sean.
Oh, my parting shot is I'm sort of can't wait for the next few episodes of the All or Nothing or Nothing series around Tottenham. I think what will be very interesting is that these future episodes will tell us more about the impact COVID had on football from the inside, particularly with Spurs' brand spanking new £1 billion stadium and the frightening prospects. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Daniel Levy have a heart attack or something, or whatever he had. I've got no idea. So that's my parting shot. So the first three episodes were out this week, the next three are out. And because the one thing that we should not forget is that football is still got a long way to get out of the mire, basically. But the good news was there were some fans in the stadium this week at Brighton. So let's hope we can get more fans back in the stadium.
All right, as we hit the bricks, your parting thoughts for today, Mr. Stead.
So also talking about fans in the stadiums, Ligue 1 seemed to have some fans in. There was a game on that I was watching. It was Marseille versus Brest, but league that's played on two. So if you were interested in watching, I believe, top-level Canadian football, tune in. They also have their studio show. Is actually it's two women who do a really, really fantastic job, and they really seem to know their league that they're covering very, very well. So if you want to see some probably maybe some conference national level football, turn to the Canadian Premier League.
Yeah, my parting shot, the Phillies beat the Nationals 8-6.
Oh, they're playing baseball? Really? Oh.
They're playing baseball. That's what I do with my time in between Premier League seasons. Parting thought, Messi to Man City for $1 billion over 5 years. That's what it looks like, and that's what's going to end up happening. All right, we are up against it. We did all right this week. We'll try and do better next week. For Producer Paul, Chelsea Mike, Coach G, British Will, Armstead, and London Sean, I'm Mike, and this has been the Two Guys Soccer Show.